You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous. At this time, we ask that you turn off all cell phones. Unless, of course, you're using them to listen to this podcast, in which case, please keep it on. And please refrain from any flash photography, as it is dangerous to the performers of this podcast. And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Just like pull up the metal door and you would hop in there.
Like Dorothy?
Yes. Yep. For real.
I'm sorry. Did I just blast you?
No. That was okay. Fine. I'm okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, welcome, theater geeks.
Oh my goodness. Were we recording that whole time?
I started recording. I forget when I started.
You've got all the power now.
I used to
have the power. I used to be able to click it and we would be listening to Ebony talking about something weird. And then all of a sudden I'd say, welcome. Well, now the tables have turned. But I love it. We were just talking about storms. So yeah, I was excited. It was a good, yeah. Welcome.
What's up, theater geeks? Today is... It's going to be a regular episode today.
Another one. Yeah.
I'm going to do a play again.
Yes, you told me this because we were trying to find something that was in the same vein as Taboo, in the same pride, LGBTQ+ vein, but we were having trouble finding another musical, which I still think there must be something.
Oh, I'm sure there's more. But this was already on the list.
Yeah.
And I saw it.
Uh-huh.
So
and I got your firsthand experience.
Yeah. I saw it and I freaking love it.
Awesome.
So much.
I have no idea what you're doing too. And I'm very excited about this. We started this as a social contract with each other. Like we're not going to tell each other what it's going to be. We're just going to do it.
We used to, but it's just like that. I feel like these last ones, we did discuss Taboo. But then I forgot.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And it was worth the surprise.
That was a good story. Good and sad. Oh, I saw when I was doing research on Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yeah.
When I was trying to figure out how that did off Broadway, there was something that popped up about Taboo.
Mm-hmm.
It was an article. Ooh, or
one that I didn't read. I feel like I read them all.
I know. Awesome. I mean, I don't know if you read it, but
you didn't
mention it. It wasn't in the air. I don't know. Did I save it? I'm not sure.
What was it about? Do you remember?
It was like talking about it coming in. And it was talking about, it was coming in with like a few other shows and they were already talking about the Tony Awards about it.
I do remember.
Did you see that one? Mm-hmm. But now I can't remember if it was an article or a podcast.
There was an article that led to a documentary that was about
the Tony Awards. Oh, maybe that's it.
That
the documentary.
Year. Yes.
It was the documentary, yeah, right?
It was, and I actually
watched it.
You well, did? Not this time. I watched it years ago because it was on Netflix at some point. So I watched it years ago. It was about. It was following around all of the shows that were up for the TV nomination that year. So Avenue Q, Wicked, Taboo.
Yes.
One other one. Do you remember what the other one was?
No.
I can't recall. Oh, I'm sorry. That's going to be terrible. But anyway, and following around those companies, and you got to see the backstage, and you got to see like the walk from, you know, rehearsals into production, and then into, you know, the Tony Awards. So it was it's definitely worth watching. I remember watching though at the time and thinking this seems like it was filmed in the 90s because it was such a strange, like it wasn't the camera footage that we're used to seeing. And it maybe like was just an analog camera or something like that. Like it wasn't digital film or something, but it looked, I remember it looking strange. And I think one of the things I recall too was they were in the hotel room of the, woman, Winnie Holtzman, who wrote the book for Wicked, when she was hearing about the nominations and how like it was kind of exciting and whatever, but then also that kind of scandal when Avenue Q won, and they think that it only won because it, you know, it made a deal with the Broadway producers saying we're going to stay here, and then they didn't stay and they went to Las Vegas and it was like this huge thing.
I saw it and I was like, oh, I want to watch that. I think it's on Prime. It's not like covered under Prime, so I'd have
you
to rent it, I think.
For free on Slingbox. So you just download the app for Slingbox and you can watch it for free.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep.
I'll do that then.
Do you remember the name of the, I'm going to look this up because now we're talking about all this stuff and then we won't be able to actually give information to our listeners for free.
I definitely don't remember the title.
Yeah. It was something like Broadway to the Tonys or something like
something
very
generic.
Very generic. Show business, : the road to Broadway.
Okay. Yep. Very generic.
Yeah. Very generic. but if you just Google that, show business, : the road to Broadway, it will come up with the links that you can watch it. And so one of the links is Sling TV for free, and you just click on watch. It'll take you to the actual website.
Okay. That's cool.
And then let's find out what the other, if I can see it in the picture, Carolina Change is that fourth one.
Yes.
So Avenue Q, Taboo, Carolina Change, and Wicked.
Which was supposed to have its revival
right now. Yes, that's right.
It was supposed to be happening right now.
That's sad. Well,
I think it's coming back next year is what they announced.
Because
at first it was supposed to come back this fall.
Yes.
But I think they announced it's coming back spring 2021. I could be wrong, but I know
Oh no, I was just going to say, I'm hopeful that all of the shows will be able to come back in whatever, you know, maybe not Broadway, but like to be able to come back as something next year, but it's not going to be until next year. I think and I just read another article yesterday or today.
Yeah.
That was like, a theater in Texas, somewhere in Texas that was going to do, a farce kind of show. I can't remember the name of the show, but it was just a comedy, 7 people on stage, and all of the actors were going to be wearing masks as well as all of the people in the audience. But then Texas's numbers kept going up and up and up. They were supposed to open it on the 26th, which would have been this last Friday as we are recording.
Yeah.
But then they had to cancel it. So and because then one of the performers also came back as having COVID-19 or being exposed to COVID-19. So then he had to go this is why I think that this is so important to wear a mask.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he didn't do anything to expose himself. What happened was his daughter had a business meeting with another man whose child was exposed in a daycare setting and then exposed his whole family. Well, that business meeting happened in a closed setting. They were 6 feet apart, but neither one of them were wearing masks. So guess what? Now his daughter was exposed, which means he was exposed, which means now you've got like this huge body count of people that have to quarantine for 14 days when all you had to do in the first place was wear a flipping mask.
I know. And people are getting, say, like, they're making up those fake cards mm-hmm. that say, like, I have a breathing condition, which, like, okay. Mm-hmm. What? So one of my friends, his father has COPD. That man has a makeshift hazmat suit when he is getting packages.
Yeah.
Not even talking about going out. Mask, gloves, the whole, like, whatever, how, yes. whatever he can cover, he covers.
Mm-hmm.
COPD is basically your lungs are hardening.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if he can wear a mask,
yes.
literally everyone else can.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, I don't understand what is happening. Okay. So now, guys, well, after all that heavy talk,
this is Theater Geeks Anonymous,
where we talk about Broadway flops, scandals, and new work.
New works.
It is still June as we are recording this, which yeah. means happy Pride Month.
Mm. Woo.
Happy.
I was taking a drink of water. That was why I couldn't say the woo. All I could do was,
And so in that spirit, with that pride, we did Taboo for the first of the two major episodes in the June series. And the second one we're going to do today for you is Significant Other, which is a play.
Okay.
Have you heard of this one?
I've heard of it, but I know nothing about it.
Okay. Cool beans. all right. So the articles I will reference are, there's a Playbill article from 2017 by Olivia Clement. There's a Broadway.com interview with Joshua Harmon. There's a 2015 Broadway World article by Ted Saad. That's also an interview with Joshua Harmon. I will reference and quote from the New York Times review by Charles Isherwood and a couple of articles from the Hollywood Reporter.
Awesome.
I'll also quote from a couple of the Josh Harmon interviews, but I'll also say, like, this is what Josh said, or this is what Trip Coleman said, the okay. director. Okay. So, Significant Other, the play, Joshua Harmon began writing the play in 2011 during his residency at the Atlantic Center for the Arts in Florida. Playwright Annie Baker instructed him to write 9 scenes that could be performed in any order. Annie, so what I got from one of his other interviews is you basically could apply for this. I forget how many weeks it was. I think he said it was something like 8 weeks, something like that. And you would be working with, like, a very well-known playwright. And obviously, like, everybody knows Annie Baker. I think she has a Pulitzer. Ooh. And she's been nominated. I don't think that's correct. I don't think that's how you say that for Pulitzers, but, like, when you're up for a Pulitzer a couple of times, list. Also, she was on, that's what it's called, shortlist. Yeah, she was shortlisted. Thank you. So the scenes came about from those 9 scenes. Joshua started writing about Jordan Berman. And in these 9 scenes, he would be talking to his therapist about a man at work that he had a crush on. In the 9 scenes, so the 9 scenes could be non-linear.
Oh, okay.
So in the 9 scenes, he was trying to ask this coworker on a date to watch a film about the Franco-Prussian War because this coworker liked historical war documentaries.
Okay.
So before he started writing this and before he did this residency, he had written a play called Bad Jews. And so a lot of people might know Bad Jews because it was off Broadway for a while. When Roundabout Theater decided to produce his play Bad Jews, Joshua decided that if the production didn't go well, he'd be too traumatized to write again. So he had to write another play before Bad Jews went to rehearsals.
I love it.
This is very much the character Jordan Berman. I mean, yeah. This sort of like neuroses kind of like, oh, no, this is all, like, sort of neurotic. I mean, this is very...
Like, I want success, but I'm scared of it. And yeah. I can't. Yes.
All going to go to pot. And so if it's all going to go to pot, I better just like prepare myself now to be really disappointed.
Yep.
The first draft of Significant Other was 176 pages, which is long for most plays. And a lot of the play originally took place in therapy. There were readings of Emily Dickinson poems and a live band, which he later cut. He cut a lot of that out, and the therapist scenes were changed to scenes between Jordan and his friends.
Oh.
The therapist, though, so the therapist in the original script was meant to be a dual part, so it would be played by the same woman who would play the therapist and his grandmother.
Oh, okay.
But he later changed that, and so the grandmother's still a character, but as I said, the therapist was no longer.
Yeah, I bet that could be confusing if you...
Yeah.
If it didn't... scene, like if it didn't wasn't directed correctly.
Right. Mm-hmm. There are three significant scenes in the play there are three significant scenes in the play where you're at each of the best friends' weddings.
Okay.
And Joshua, so this came out of Joshua saying he thought about how at every wedding there's always that lonely person in the corner, and he wanted to explore what that lonely person might be going through.
Oh, I like that. That's right. It's such a kind of, you know, it's like a new telling of an old story.
Yeah. I have a very, okay. So I was reading that and I was like, oh, I have a sad corner story. And it's like actually really sad.
Oh.
So like if my friends are like making good choices and they found somebody who like makes absolute sense, and I'm like, good job, girl. I am so excited for them. Like I have planned bridal showers and helped plan weddings I wasn't even in. That's how excited I get for my friends when they're making good choices.
Yes.
Love it. Okay. So I had a close friend. I was at her wedding. Mind you, this was only about a year and a half after my mom had passed away, not quite 2 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had known her for, oh my gosh, 13 years at this point. Yeah. So I was like super, super excited for her. But what happened is, okay, we're at the reception and we get to the mother-son dance.
Oh, yeah.
So my mom only lived long enough to see my brother get married, my little brother get married. And so when he got married and they did the mother-daughter dance, they did it to that Boys to Men song from Soul Food, Mama.
Yeah.
Well, my friend who got married, like, I never would have expected she or her fiance to choose a Boys to Men song.
Yeah.
But they chose the same song.
Oh my goodness.
I have never had less control of my tear ducts than I did. I was in the corner.
Your face was leaking.
Sobbing.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was bad.
So much. This is why music is so important. It ties
all
of these memories. It's like that and smell. are the two main things that, like, you smell something or you hear a song that's really truly amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, though that is sad.
I've never had a sad moment at a wedding. I love the crap out of weddings. I mean, I'm only sad if like my girlfriend's not making a great decision. I'm like, why are we doing this?
But
when they are, I'm telling you, I am over the moon, outside of my mind happy. But that threw me for a loop.
I'm sure.
I was like, I usually have more control over over the tear ducts.
Not
I
had me. The second I am happy, I start crying. Like, and this And I never used to be that way. It started to get that way maybe in my mid-20s to mm-hmm. late 20s, and where like even a commercial would throw me over the, like, I'll get so excited and I'll be laughing and I'll be like, ah, I don't know why, I felt like everything will just come out my face. Like but every time now I go to a wedding, I know I'm gonna cry. Like I get that choked up throat feeling and I'm like, don't ugly cry, just don't ugly cry. I sang at a friend's wedding once. And
yeah.
In the middle of the song, I got choked up and started crying. And I was like, this is not good. Like, this is their day. Don't make it about you. It was awful. But I mean, it was a true moment. And then I went to them later and I was like, I'm so sorry. And they were like, no, no, you don't understand. Like, that made the whole ceremony for us, because it was like so heartfelt. And I was like, yeah, oh, it really was.
Oh, Lordy. Yeah, no, but that feeling of like, oh my God, I can't make this about me. I mean, I was in the corner,
yeah,
trying to get as far away from every, because I'm like, this is a wonderful moment and I have no control, none whatsoever. Oh, I was texting my brother and sister and I was like, I'm in the corner, I've lost it. They were like, oh no, oh Eb, oh no.
I feel like that needs to be a Pasek and Paul song. I'm in the corner and I have no control.
I have no control. I've lost it. Like, not all of us can sing through sobbing like Ben can. Like, we're not all.
Certainly not me. And like Donna Murphy, I would always watch her on stage. Mm-hmm. And she'd be like bawling, like tears would be running down her face. And she'd have like complete control over that vocal instrument. Yeah. And I said that once in a dressing room and someone else was like, Pamela, she was acting. And I was like, oh. Oh, I see. Okay, I got that.
I know, but still.
No, it's, yeah.
I mean, like, when I saw Ben, I mean, snot, like, it was one of those Viola Davis sobs. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and kids still had perfect control. I was just like, I don't understand what's happening.
Oh, wow.
How are you doing this? Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, this is not a musical, so. So plot synopsis. This one's very short. If you have more questions, I'm happy to answer, because like I said, I've seen it actually now twice.
Oh, nice.
The play tells the story of Jordan Berman, a gay man who is soon to turn 30, who has three close female friends, Vanessa, Kiki, and Laura. He attempts to find the love of his life, always with the encouragement of his friends, but fails miserably. Meanwhile, one by one, his girlfriends get married, and he's left feeling alone, and more than alone, abandoned. He can't hide his resentment, and is given to rants, which really, really do happen. There's...
Wow.
I don't know that I would say he rants with the girlfriends so much.
Yeah.
There is one really heartbreaking scene that happened between Gideon and Lindsay. It's just so great. And in all of the reviews, like everyone comments on it and they say something that's so true. They're always like, they're both absolutely 100% right in their argument.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. So he's arguing about what it feels like to be left abandoned. And like, you know, they had this one promise that like, if neither of them found somebody, then, you know, they would get married, and they had started naming their kids, and they said like what their song would be. And it's like the Celine Dion song. And she like, she meets somebody, he's super nice. I mean, this is one of those times where I was like, okay, girl has made a wise decision. Like, this is a really good person.
Yeah.
And he likes him a lot too. But then, you know, but then you also have like this bridezilla aspect where it's like so expensive to be a part of a wedding, you know? And in his case, like, she doesn't even make him a bridesman.
Oh, okay.
You know, and that's her best friend. I mean, throughout the whole play, like they're thicker than either of them are with the other two girls. Mm-hmm. Like they're as thick as thieves.
Oh, so it was the other two friends that made it into the bridal party, but not him?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that they, the two of them, and then she had to pick, like, I don't know, his sister or something like mm-hmm. that or whatever. And so she was like, the numbers would be off. Like, this is, it's just such a, like, that's really a cop out. But then also she talks about how, like, how are you making this about you? Like, this is my day. I mean, mm-hmm. both arguments, absolutely valid.
Yeah.
You're totally split down the middle and on both sides. Really, really beautiful argument. So these are some quotes from Joshua's 2015 Broadway World interview. I wanted to examine questions and concerns and fears, which are my own. And if they are my own, then I must believe they're not unique only to me. Mm. Watching my friends date, seeing some of my friends get married while others remain single, both happily and begrudgingly.
Oh, okay.
I was struggling.
Good. I liked it.
Seeing how people's lives change once they get married, watching friendships change, all contributed to this play. But ultimately, whatever ideas I had before writing the play made its own demands. So I had to be willing to bend toward the play and allow it to become what it wanted to become. There are three significant scenes in the play where at each of the best friends' weddings, and Joshua said that he thought about, oh, I said this part already. Yeah, I did. Oh, I put it in there twice. Let me delete that. I will
edit it in post.
Yep, cut that out. Whoopsies. Where's the delete? Wait. Goodness. Okay, it's fine. Okay, so here's another quote from Josh, and it's from that same article. Today, people are getting married later and later. If a person used to get married at 20 or 22, now they wait until 27 or 29. So he wanted to explore, like, what are they doing in those years to find intimacy and love and connection? Mm-hmm. He said, perhaps they have boyfriends, but I've observed that a lot of these non-romantic needs get fulfilled in friendships. So a person often enters a marriage with a group of friends who have served in so many ways as surrogate platonic lovers. Those friendships can be intense and powerful and deeply meaningful. A romantic connection outside the friendship necessarily ruptures that relationship. It's a tricky balancing act. How to be happy for a friend, even when you know in some respects you're losing them, and often when you need them most. There's totally, like, you and I are both single, so there's totally, like, that grieving period.
Sure.
And that moment of, like, adjustment that you have to have where you're like, okay, so we totally understand things are changing, but I have a lot of married friends and or friends who are just in, like, significant relationships who are not mm-hmm. married.
Yeah.
And if somebody matters to you, you are able to make the time for them.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Yes.
Right? So, like, I have all of these friends who are married or in significant relationships still because they were like, well, Ebony's still important enough for me to, like, make some time for her.
Yeah.
And it's not that, like, I realize it's not going to be the same amount of time it used to be.
Sure.
But there's also the flip side where people get so engrossed in their world where it's like you've disappeared.
Yeah.
And they don't spend any time with you. They don't want to hear what's going on with you. Like, they make absolutely no time. Mm-hmm. And so then you're like, okay, well, I see where I ranked.
Yeah. I think I've been in both scenarios.
Yeah, same.
But I'd say that the most important relationship I have is with Juliet, who is married and has three young children. And when she was still living in Astoria, we had a weekly wine night. We would get together, we would drink a bottle of wine, and we would watch like Scandal or Nashville or Gilmore Girls, you know, whatever it was. But we made that like a weekly date. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that that date could change potentially based on her family, on, you know, the kids or the husband or whatever it was. And I knew that, but it wasn't ever like, I never felt like she didn't think me important. I never thought that our relationship, although it had changed, I never felt like it had disappeared. It was always, it was always mutually important to both of us. Mm-hmm. But it was also because I knew and this is something that comes from my mother. I'm the kind of person that's like, you just let me know what you'd like to do. I'm happy to do it. You know what I mean? Like when I come to visit for the holidays, she's like, well, I'd love to go get lunch with you, but you just let me know what you want to do tomorrow. You can just sit in a room and watch TV, or we can go to dinner or whatever you want. You just let me know. But it's always like, you know, of course I'm going to go out to dinner with you, Mom. I came all this way to visit you.
Yeah.
But she doesn't ever want to be that kind of person that like inserts herself into your life.
Right. Right.
You know, in a way that is rude or bombastic or anything like that. She, she wants it to be a relationship that is easy and that is loving on both sides and that is respectful. I think it's mostly respectful.
Yeah.
And so that is the relationship that I've cultivated with my best friend. You know, it is a respectful relationship. I will never, you know, if I call her and she doesn't answer me or she sends me to voicemail, I don't get offended by that. I think, oh, I wonder which kid is getting in trouble right now. You know what I mean? Like, 'cause I know what her life is. And likewise, if I have to put her, you know, straight to voicemail, she's like, oh, she's probably grooming a dog right now. Do you know? Yeah. So it's never, but I think that that's super important because I have had the alternative as well. Where, now that you've got your family, that's all you need. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll step out then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it hurts.
Yeah.
It is very hurtful. But, you know, I think as I get older, I just don't care. I much prefer quality over quantity. So, you know, if it's too hard to be your friend, then I don't need to be.
Yeah. No, same. I've had that as well. I've had the first part and the second part. Like I said, I still am good friends with a lot of people and relationships. But then there have been those and are those where it's like, as soon as the person gets into a relationship, it's like, you don't really hear from them.
Yeah.
But like also don't come back to me after, you know, like years or months or whatever of barely understanding I exist and then ask me for something.
Yes. Yes. Or try to sell me whatever it is you're trying to like get money for on your side hustle.
No.
Like, don't you dare. Like I don't even know why you're still my Facebook friend.
Yes.
Yeah. There is something very offensive about that and very disrespectful.
Yep.
Honestly, that's where the phrase fair weather friend came into play. Do you know what I mean? Like our friendship is only good when it's 90 degrees and sunny outside, well, then it's not going to be a heck of a lot, you know, a heck of a friendship when winter hits.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's no good.
No,
especially if it's my winter and that's when I need you the most.
Yeah. Which, and that's totally to Josh's point here. Mm. It's like sometimes, like he said, sometimes, you know, you lose them when you need them the most. Yep. Yep.
Ugh.
It's really something. Really pain and grief really weed out, like you said, the fair weather friends.
Yeah.
So the play was produced off Broadway by the Roundabout Theater Company at the Laura Pels Theater. It premiered on May 16th, 2015, and officially opened on June 18th. And then closed on August 16th of 2015. I believe it was extended. So it wasn't, it was on a limited run already, but then okay. It got extended at least one time, I believe.
Okay.
That production was directed by Trip Cullman. The cast featured Gideon Glick as Jordan, with John Bellman, Sass Goldberg, Lindsay Mendez, Kara Patterson, Luke Smith, and Academy Award nominee Barbara Barry as Jordan's grandmother in her return to the stage at the age of 84.
Love it.
Yep. This is a quote from Trip Cullman. When I first read the play, I was reeling from a horrific breakup. I was in this place of acute despair and numbing anxiety. What if I never find someone else? And that was it. I remember relating so intensely to the expressions of loneliness that Jordan has. Make no mistake, Significant Other is a comedy, but a lot of the laughs come at the expense of the character's happiness, none more so than Jordan's. Mm. Harmon says that he never intended for Significant Other to be a comedy. Oh. He said, I honestly thought that I had written the saddest play, he said. I don't write thinking about the comedy. I'm genuinely always surprised when something winds up being funny.
I love that, though, because, I mean, true comedy, it's the other side of a tragedy coin.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no differentiating them. Mm-hmm. I think any comedy could be played as a tragedy, and any yep. tragedy could be played as a comedy, depending on how it is directed.
That's true.
Which is so cool to me. But anyway.
It's true. And I feel that with this, like, it's like in the way that Gideon delivers a line, it's in the way, like, his mannerisms, a choice that he makes, a choice that Lindsay makes, or any Rachel or any number of the other actors. Like, it's just in, like, if they played it one other way, it would be really depressing. And I don't think it would hit the poignant moments. And the truth of it wouldn't have hit as hard as sure. it does when you see it, because it is a comedy. The off-Broadway run was a critical darling, and this powered the show to Broadway. Significant Other marked the Broadway debut for director Trip Cullman and playwright Joshua Harmon. It was only the second time a new play by Roundabout had been transferred to Broadway at the time. The first time was by Stephen Karam's Tony-winning best play, The Humans. I also saw The Humans. I really love that play.
Cool.
As well. The off-Broadway cast reprised their roles for the Broadway production. So Gideon was Jordan Berman. Barbara Barry was Helene Berman, his grandmother, who was suffering from dementia. John Bellman played three characters, Will, Conrad, and Tony. This was the Broadway debut for Sass Goldberg, who played Kiki. Then Rebecca Naomi Jones played Vanessa. Lindsay Mendez played Laura, and it was also the Broadway debut for Luke Smith, who played Zach, Evan, and Roger. So I was listening to the Billboard on Broadway podcast, and there was, like, a fun little aside about Rebecca Naomi Jones and Lindsay Mendez. Uh-huh. So Lindsay says, she said, Rebecca and I end up, like, filling in for the other. So, for example, like, if Rebecca can't take a part because of scheduling conflicts, they usually call Lindsay and vice versa. And if you like, she's like, we don't look anything alike.
Yeah.
I would venture to say their singing voices are not very similar either.
I know the name Rebecca Naomi Jones, and I actually Googled her just
Oklahoma.
Now. Thank
you. She was in the Oklahoma revival.
Okay.
That just happened. Yeah.
I could not place it. I mean, she's done a lot of other stuff, as I just saw, but no, they do not have similar voices.
No. So even Lindsay was like, it's weird. I'm not really sure why it happens, but they've never gone in the same thing at the same time.
Yeah.
So she said they would say to each other, I hope one day we actually get to do something together. And she's like, well, here it is, a play. It's not even a musical that we get to do together.
Awesome.
I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
Broadway previews for Significant Other began on February 14th, 2017. So Valentine's Day, which
Love
is like
it.
Pretty awesome.
Marketing, marketing, marketing.
Right? It was at the Booth Theater. Opening night was March 2nd of 2017, and unfortunately, the closing date ended up being April 23rd of 2017. After the show failed to make it above a 33% gross potential for its weekly earnings.
Yikes.
It had 19 previews and 61 regular performances. Joan Marcus for The Hollywood Reporter writes, "Yet upon transferring to Broadway, where the production opened March 2nd, it proved a weak draw at the box office. Last week, the show grossed only $141,742, just 19% of its potential gross, and the theater was only 45% full, according to the Broadway League. Its cumulative grosses after 7 weeks stand at a little over $1.2 million. And, I mean, for a play, I mean, you're talking to put it up probably costs 12 to 15 million.
Yeah.
Just to get it up on its feet.
Yeah. So if their capacity was 45%, but they were only hitting 19%, does that mean that the bulk of that was like papering the audience?
Yeah, it was a lot of papering.
Okay. Well, that's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I went to see it, it was closing in a few days. Mm. And I bought a cheap ticket way up in the balcony, and the theater was so empty. After everyone came in, they told us to move to like the lower part of the balcony. I mean, that theater,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I do think it only has two because they definitely said, you know, it was a smaller, more intimate theater.
Oh, that was okay. So Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf was meant to be there this
year. That's what I was like, I think it closed. That's what, okay.
But was where Boys in the Band was. And that's also where Gary, which was a sequel to Titus Andronicus, was.
Yes, yes. Okay. Yep, yep, yep. Okay.
Cool.
The show's Broadway run had a majority of good reviews, but between the time, okay, so this is like the tidbit of news, right? So it did. It had a lot of good reviews, the Broadway run, but between the time that it moved from off-Broadway to Broadway, Charles Isherwood was let go from the New York Times.
Oh, I remember talking about this.
Yes. And he loved Significant Other. He was a major champion of that play.
Yeah.
So then between those two times, all the other reviews were pretty good. But then Ben Brantley reviewed the Broadway run, and he was meh about it.
He's always meh about everything. Have we ever read like a good review from Ben Brantley?
I feel like
Ben Brantley always comes up in this podcast because we're always talking about flops.
Yeah. 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 I remember Charles being on Theater Talk and talking about Significant Other and just how much he loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, he really loved this play.
Yeah.
And I really, really love it also. So it was just very sad to see it close so quickly. And I remember like talking about, because I had a lot of friends who saw the off-Broadway run and they were just like, oh, it's so good. Oh my God. Like, right. So I was like, okay. I didn't make it to the off-Broadway run. It was like, I'm going to do the Broadway. Like, I have to get in there.
Yeah.
And then I saw it. And then I was like texting. I think actually I'm lying. And it was not the week it was closing. I think it was at least 2 weeks before.
Okay.
Because I was telling everybody to go see it. Mm. And I think a couple of people listened to me, but I know my one friend, Taylor, in particular, who lives in Philadelphia, I was like, you have to come see this. You have to.
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay. He comes down from Philly and goes to see it. And he's like, oh my God. Oh my God. I'm on stage. Oh my God. You know, like, I was like, I know, right? I know. I mean, like, I'm not a gay man, but
yeah,
there were so many things that he said, and I'm also a happily single person.
Yeah, totally.
But like those moments where like For me, I'm like, there needs to be more ways to celebrate single people. Yeah. I feel like every time there's a party, it's for somebody who's like getting married. It's like, why is it the only way we celebrate women? That's right? Garbage. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Like it was my plan when I graduated CTI to have an actual like party at a restaurant because yeah. I was like, I flipping got into something only like 27 people get in and flipping. I don't even know how I got into this, but I got into it. I was like, and I'm tired of it only being about like, if you get married or pop out a kid, like why? Yeah.
Yes.
My celebration well, have to like, have anything to do with the dude. Right. Like it should have nothing to do with the dude.
Yes.
And like celebrate me because I'm awesome.
Societal norms.
Yes.
Like why is my life only going in the direction that society wants it to when I hit these certain milestones?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like that's not because even and I am getting over it, but every once in a while we'll just kind of like get a little bit of like a oh in my tummy about it. You know, like where yeah. I look at my life and I'm like, I haven't accomplished anything, which is absolute crap yeah. because I've done a lot in my life, but on paper, it looks like I haven't done anything.
Yeah.
Because on paper, that's what society is looking at. That's what the world is looking at. And they're seeing the fact that I've never been married and I've never had a child and I've never purchased a house, but I see it in that I'm living by myself in an apartment in New York City with my two dogs and I have a car that's parked in a parking spot that I pay for. And like that all right there is a very blessed person.
Yeah, do you know and what you're I mean? Doing like, a job you like to do.
Yes. Yes. And I've changed my idea of what my life was supposed to be several times, but I've been happy at every turn.
Yeah.
But it's still, there is like this kind of frustration that it's, you know, I've never felt the biological clock. I always did think I was going to have children because I love children.
Yeah.
But even that was like, do I want children because I want children or do I want children because I'm supposed to have them?
Right, right.
And really to answer that question, it was because I was supposed to quote unquote have them.
Right.
It's not actually, and I still love them,
yeah.
but I don't want any of my own. And that is okay. But I'm a woman in my late 30s who has finally come to that realization and can say it out loud and dismiss anybody that comes at me for not wanting children. Do you know what I mean? But like,
oh, I totally do.
I never would have been able to do that.
There's this woman that I told you to follow and you listened to me and you did it. Her name is Rachel Cargill, but she also started, I would say about a month and a half ago, another Instagram hashtag or not hashtag handle called Rich Auntie Supreme.
Okay.
And it's for all the women who like love being aunties, but don't want to be child free. And I was like, yes. So I've been following. Oh, I love it. So
I have
good.
9 of them. I'm the best aunt.
Gosh. I only have 6 and I'm like, it's a
You'll
lot.
Get there.
So I'm going to close with a little bit of Charles Isherwood's review from the New York Times. Writing with buoyancy, belying the play's undertow of sadness, Mr. Harmon acutely captures that perilous period in young adulthood when friends from college and work begin palling into mere acquaintances. The besties you chatted with almost every day begin pairing off with other people, some you like, some you don't, and receding into the distance, not entirely by quite perceptibly. Suddenly, there's only the occasional dinner or text exchange to stir the cooling embers of a once blazing friendship. Sprinkled throughout the play are scenes of Jordan visiting his beloved grandmother, played with unsentimental grace by Barbara Barry, the sleek set by Mark Wendland whisks us easily among the play's diverse locations. A perceptive and poignant point of connection between Jordan and his grandmother is the unspoken idea that at certain junctures in life, you lose your friends for marriage or worse, of course, death. Mm. How's your social life? She asks him gently at the beginning of each visit, meaning they both know. Any special guy in your life? But Jordan has little to report. He takes it as a sign of serious hope that Will accepted his friend request on Facebook within 10 minutes, which means nothing. Eventually, he works up the courage to ask Will on a movie date, which doesn't end promisingly, and afterward composes a moody, "Gee, I really like you" email that he reads to his girlfriends, who unanimously and in voices dark with foreboding advise him by no means to send. Naturally, he does it anyway.
Oh no!
That's a great scene. In one of the interviews with Gordon or with Gideon, Gideon says that he could sometimes hear the audience be like, "No, don't send it."
Totally. Oh man!
You just be audibly be like, "No, don't do it," and he would do it anyway. It's too late. Mr. Glick grounds the comedy in emotional truth. Jordan's crush on Will may be hopeless. With his looks from an Abercrombie and Fitch shopping bag, Will is the embodiment of the Fire Island-going gym rat type of gay man whom Jordan, sorry buddy, could only dream of dating. But who among us has not at some point set our sights on a god, little g, forgetting that they tend to frolic with one another? I hate being a person, Jordan says in one of his lowest moments. I wish I was a rock, you know, or anything, a salamander, dental floss, rain. It's a funny line, but Mr. Glick invests it with real sadness, a reminder that the burden of wanting love and not having it can make living itself a purgatory. But such is his ebullient charm and Mr. Harmon's depiction of his character's plight, that we in the audience wouldn't want Jordan to be anyone or anything but himself.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good review.
Isn't it? So lovely.
Yeah.
I really love that play. There was a Zoom version that happened last month.
Oh, fun. Oh, I think I saw something about that.
Yeah. And I watched that as well. And it was really well done. You know, I mean, Zoom, of course, like.
Yeah. Has its challenges.
Right. It does, you know, but at least it's much harder with really sort of snappy dialogue. True. And this wasn't as like over. This isn't as overlapping.
Okay.
So it didn't feel like you were missing a lot. Yeah. There's been other shows I've seen where it's like, this isn't really working very well because you need to be a little snappier and you can't really be. But this went along very well. Barbara, you could see she had the script, but the way she did it, it didn't look weird.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So like you could kind of tell, like, she's, you know, I mean, my God, it was 2017. So you're talking, she's like 87, 88. Yeah.
There's a real finesse, like, there's a real finesse in using your script to also perform at the same time.
Yeah. 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 You know, and also like, his grandmother is suffering from like the early stages of dementia. So even when she would miss her place, she would sort of play into that dementia.
Smart.
I mean, it was really great. Great. That's job. Awesome. An 87-year-old woman figuring out how to be an actor on Zoom. I give her all the credit. You know what I mean?
Kidding. No kidding. Wow.
I'm like, 37-year-olds can't figure that out, let alone 87, you know, so God bless her, you know, really. So, yep, that's the story of Significant Other. It's had like other regional productions and I just love it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's it, guys. That's going to be our last show for the June. We have to figure out what we're going to do for July.
You will not actually hear any of these episodes in June.
Right.
Because I'm going to be posting Taboo this up. Right. Tuesday, which is the last day of June. So yeah. You'll hear that one, but that's okay because you forgive us. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll figure out what July is and you'll get some episodes.
Yay.
Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We appreciate you. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.